I never even thought of making Olympic trials when I was younger. Like, I didn't even know that was an option. So it's just crazy to me to think back how far I've come, especially from, I mean, I'm still swimming in the same pool that I was back then, but it's so different.
Welcome to the Swim Strong Dry Land podcast, where we aim to highlight inspiring people doing amazing things in the Swim Strong family and in the greater swim community. I'm here with Emily Thompson out of Greater Somerset County YMCA and from Ridge High School. Emily is also a part of the Swim Strong Dryland small group team and has been for a long while now, and has been someone who has inspired me in many different ways through the course of her career. And so we're going to jump into all that. But Emily, first, we got to get to our rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
Okay. Yes, I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. Question number one, what is your walkout song?
It would probably be The Night Is Still Young by Nicki Minaj.
Oh, Nicki Minaj. How about your favorite restaurant to go out to on a swim meet weekend?
Ooh, okay. I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but it's good luck to go to Chipotle.
Yes. Yeah. It's the best place. All right. How about on those lines, what is your favorite pool that you've ever swam at?
Probably the GAC. Really good memories there. So
lots of meets at the GAC. All right. What is currently your least favorite event to swim?
probably the two free.
Two really interesting.
Yeah.
Your freestyle's gotten so good though.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, still not my favorite stroke.
All right. Next question. You get to pick two people from the Swim Strong family that you would want to survive on a deserted island with to give you the best chance to live. Who are you picking?
I think I'd pick Kenny. And I'd pick Leah Shackley.
Kenny and Leah, those are good.
Yeah,
picks.
I think we'd make a great trio, and I think Leah would keep us alive.
You would and make it out alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah,
definitely true. All right. How about your favorite candy?
Oh, Butterfinger.
Butterfinger. Best movie you've ever seen?
I really love The Hunger Games.
It's good. And last question, what's your favorite thing about Swim Strong Dryland?
Definitely the family that, you know, this program creates for sure. And it brings me close to people all around the country and even within New Jersey. So that's definitely my favorite part.
It's awesome. Well, you did awesome with those. You're quick on the rapid fire questions. No hesitation. That was awesome.
Thank you.
So, Emily, thanks so much for taking the time to be on here. I love having you as a part of the Swim Strong family. You bring so much to the table for everyone's lives that you're in. But in particular, I want to dive into your personal story so people who don't know you as well can see some of the behind the scenes. Can you start off just sharing how you got into swimming, what made you fall in love with this sport? Kind of just fast forward through your journey from baby Emily to now where you are in your swim journey.
Yeah, sure. So when I was younger, like 3 or 4, you know, I'm sure you know this, but we talked on deck and I really love to talk. I'm very like high energy. And so my mom found that bringing me to the Y and just like swimming in the baby pool really got the energy out, definitely gave her a break. So eventually, I joined the clinics at the YMCA, and we have a really big swimming community here in my area of New Jersey. So I did a summer team, which was very competitive, and eventually joined the club team at the Y, where I'm still at. And I swam there for 3 years at Somerset Hills. And then after 3 years, I moved to about 10 minutes away to Somerset Valley for 5 years. And then those teams actually merged back in 2020. So for the past 3.5 years, I've been swimming on Greater Somerset County. And so I was reunited with all my childhood friends from my original team. And it's just been so much fun. And I really fell in love with the sport. I mean, I've always been super competitive. And I think a lot of people joined because their friends were doing it. And my friends were doing it too, which was really fun. But I think the main reason I always participated in this sport was simply because I was super competitive and I loved to win, even when I was like 7, 8 years old. And I was really food motivated when I was younger, and they used to give you candy if you won. So that was really it for me. I loved winning, and the candy was great too. And I also got to be with my friends. So it was just win all around.
That's a lot of win. Yeah, there's actually a lot of stories of people who have like snow cone Fridays or like go out to get ice cream after practice or like that. That's like what kept them excited about swimming when they were young and then being around their friends. So was there a certain like candy that you would get after some of the practices or meets that was like a go-to?
So we always had this like little meet when we were 8-unders. It was Candy Cane Classic. And if you win your heat, then you get a candy cane. So that was definitely motivating. Also, our summer team, there was another really competitive girl. And we always used to race. And she always beat me. This one time, I beat her. Finally, I was so proud of myself. And they gave me like one of those big bags of Swedish fish. So, yeah.
Those are actually really good, too. So how did you go from just being, like you said, you've always been competitive, but kind of going from where those external motivations and friends and things like that to like, I realize I'm pretty good at this sport and I want to be great and see how far I can go. Do you remember like a time where that clicked? Like, did you ever swim a race and you're like, oh, wow, I'm fast?
So I think when I've always felt like I've been pretty strong. Like my body type is just like kind of like that. And so I had a little bit of an advantage when I was younger. So, but I never really felt like I wanted to be really good up until, I mean, I did like pretty competitive swimming from like, I think 5 until I was like 8. And then I joined the club team when I was 7. So about a year into my club career, I was 8 years old and there was this 25 freestyle record. And I absolutely need to get that record. So I think that's the first time where I sort of felt like I really wanted, it was more of like an intrinsic motivation for me.
Yeah.
So I didn't get the record, but I was really close. And I guess we'll never know because I did use hand timers, you know, when you're 8-unders.
Yeah.
But that's sort of when I felt the switch. And ever since then, when I was 9 and 10, I was really working for it. And I switched teams. And I think that also really aided in more working on, you know, internal motivation instead of being motivated by other things. Because I just really loved the atmosphere of my new team. And
yeah,
I think I really blossomed there.
It's important to have an atmosphere or culture that you can thrive in that pushes you to be the best version of yourself, because intrinsic motivation is crazy important, but the environment around you can help bring the best out of you, or it can like dampen you depending on who you're surrounded by. So definitely important to understand and recognize that. So I think the hand timers were probably a little slow. I think they weren't very good. I think you got that 8.
Oh, thank you. Well, I personally thought that I did. So I think
yeah. I think we should get, yeah, we got to find those hand timers if we can go back and look at the record books there. But that's pretty crazy to me that you had that mindset even that young, like 8 years old and like wanting that. Where did that come from for you? Have you ever thought about that? Is that something that was like instilled in you from like family or just like you, just unique to you?
Yeah, so I think part of that is I was a competitive piano player when I was younger. So I started at 3 and then I did competitions. And
you're playing piano at 3?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible.
My mom was like, "Oh, the music, like learning music and understanding music is going to help you later in life." And I do really think that's true. And that helped me sort of have like personal motivation. And I also did team sports, and for me, it just wasn't the same. So, I really just have always felt pretty individual ever since I was younger, I think, because I started playing piano, and, you know, it's really not like a duet or a team thing at all. So.
Yeah, it was how you can be the best that you can be.
Yeah.
And do you still play piano to this day, or how long did you play for?
I do. I do not compete anymore, but I do play for fun.
Okay, very cool. What type of music did you like to play?
So I played a lot of Beethoven, Bach, like classical, but now I play pop, like pop music, I guess. I like to play Taylor Swift or like other songs on the radio, and I like make my own arrangements. Pretty fun.
That's amazing. I did not know that about you. So I'm going to request if your mom has any videos of like 3-year-old Emily playing the piano that we could like overlay on this podcast, that would be really cool.
Yeah. Okay, I can ask her.
I wonder if she has any. That would be so incredible to see. I'm trying to imagine. I don't even remember being alive at 3 years old. I don't know how I could have played piano. You're like 10 years ahead of your time. That's crazy. Wow. Okay. I wonder what else incredible things you do that people have no idea about. So taking that mindset into swimming, then that's something that I recognized right when I met you. And I love this story. I don't know if hardly anybody knows this, but I met you in person for the first time. I think you were either 12 or 13. Do you remember?
Yes, I was 14.
Oh, you're 14.
And yeah, it was back in 2020.
Yeah. 2020, so 4 years ago. And okay, so you're 14. Yeah, that's right, because it's 13, 14 age group that you were competing against. Erica Pelaez, who is on Eagle Aquatics, which is where I'm at currently in person until I moved to Indiana this fall. And I remember watching her in the age group meets just like dusting everybody, because that's just, there was no one in like the LSC who was just anywhere close. And then I see this Emily Thompson in the heat sheet from a team up in New Jersey. And I was like, who is that? And I remember like watching your race. I can't remember if it's the two back or the one back or something. Whatever the first race I saw you guys, I mean, I was used to seeing her like a whole pool length ahead of everybody. And you were like,
yeah,
with her like the entire race. And I was like, who is this? And I remember talking to you and your mom. And I was just like, you just had a different mentality, even from the moment that I first talked to you and your mom. And then I remember I got a picture with you and Eric. I'm sure I can find that somewhere and we could put that in here. But I was so blown away at your mindset, at your focus, the fact that you were living in New Jersey at the time. This is during the pandemic, so a lot of things were shut down. Florida had a lot of outdoor meets. And you were so dedicated that you came down to race in Florida, like as a 13, 14. I was like, that is wild. And not normal. And, but you know, is that when you were, during that time, during the pandemic, what did you do to like still be the best you could be? Cause that was something that really impressed me and was unique during that time. And it is hard on a lot of people. And I'm sure it was hard on you, just like everybody in different ways. But some people made excuses during a time that it was crazy hard, and some people like went out of their way to find a new level of greatness, and you did that. So how did you do that? What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, so I remember that meet. That was so much fun. Yeah, me and Erica, I think we raced two fly, two back, and maybe something else. But that was so much fun, and that was sort of in the middle of my COVID journey. So New Jersey, I know you lived in Florida, but New Jersey was super shut down. So we shut down March 14th, and then we were out until June 22nd. So that, because the pools are just too cold outside, it's really not an option. So for the first 2 months, March, probably March and April, I ran a lot. So I did like 5Ks. I don't know. I can't run like that anymore, but I used to run so much. And then my grandparents live about 10 minutes away, and they had a little backyard pool, which was about 12 meters. And we swam there. So that was a lot of fun. And then we got back in the pools in June. And then, so this was June 2020. And then everything shut down again back in November, November of 2020. And that's when we met. So all of our mid seasons were canceled. Everything was canceled. And my mom had the foresight to sign me up for a random meet in Florida, which I think it was like Speedo Juniors something, because she's like, Erica Pelaez is going to be there. She's super fast. Like if something happens, we can go there and you can race her.
That's incredible.
So so it actually ended up working out. And that was the beginning of our Florida journey. So that was December 2020. And it was right before my 15th birthday. And on my 15th birthday, we drove and moved to Florida for 3 months, where we lived in Naples and trained there.
Insane.
Well, everything was closed in New Jersey, and it was just a phenomenal experience. But it certainly was a big sacrifice. I mean, I was with my mom and my brother and my dogs, luckily, but I was away from my dad for a really long period of time, which was hard. And I obviously wasn't with my friends from home, and I was doing virtual school. So it was definitely a lot of sacrifices swimming wise. But it was probably one of the best and most fun times of my entire life. So
the behind the scenes of that is just wild. Like, for people who just think like that, you know, you became great because you're super talented, like, just listen to that story. And like, you don't even have to hear anything else to hear the crazy dedication and love for the sport and desire to continue to be better, even if it means sacrificing all kinds of different things and overcoming adversity and just finding a way, even when it seems like there's no way. And you talked about like all the different cardio things you were doing when you're out of the pool. It's like, I can't swim, so I'm going to run. Some people did biking. Some people did rowing. Some people did in place dynamic work in their house, whatever space they had. And I remember that. I remember like sending out COVID programming to teams who like everybody went under, and it was just like a huge component of it was non-swimming cardio because there was no swimming. And it's wild to think about, but it's no shock that you continued to skyrocket during that time and after that time. And something else that I think is unique and really cool about you is that it's not like you're like freakishly tall or anything like that. You're not like gifted height wise. How tall are you?
I'm 5'5". I've been 5'5" for a long time, unfortunately. I think I'm done.
So you probably haven't grown in a while, but like, you've continued to get so much better. And in swimming, in the swimming world, like, I think 5'5" is pretty close to like around average height for like a woman in this country, but like, it's definitely below average for like high level elite swimmers. And that has never stopped you from being phenomenal. You are not only a New Jersey State champion, but a national champion, Olympic trials qualifier, right? Just got a trials cut.
Yes. Thank you, Coach Eric.
And like, that's so, how come you don't ever make excuses? Like, why are you just like, hey, you could be like, hey, I'm not as tall as a lot of people. Hey, COVID, hey, this, hey, that. Like, how come every opportunity you've had to be like, I could settle for like just whatever the car, whatever, you know, may happen, but you're never doing that. How come you've never made excuses?
I think I always have believed that you can never be the best you can possibly be. And I think there's always room for improvement anywhere. Especially when something like height is unfortunately a big factor in the sport. I sort of found that as I was like, at sort of when we met 14, 15, a lot of the girls were now a lot taller than me. And I was originally a very good sprinter. I was tall when I was younger, but I didn't really let that stop me. But I did switch from swimming the 50 and the 100 to focusing on the 4IM, the 2FLY and the 2BACK. And I just always feel like something, if one thing isn't right, there is something else that's right. And also, I'm still very competitive, just like I was when I was younger. So that definitely has not stopped. And I still, you know, really want to win. And I do think that, you know, sometimes it can be hard, especially when, you know, there's a lot of excuses that could be made. But the best thing, my favorite part about, like, I can always find the silver lining in things, even if it's very, very thin and difficult to find. that's what I really like to do. So, yeah.
That's a mindset. I mean, it is. And I always love asking, for everybody who listens to this podcast, it's pretty obvious. I love talking about the mindset because that's where everything starts. And what's so interesting to me about like all the national champions that I interview, people who are swimming at the highest level, Olympic champions, whatever, they all have a mindset that's just different. It's just not the same as 99% of the population. And everybody is very unique in their scale as far as like talent. Some are wicked talented, some are not at all. And but your biggest talent is your mindset and having confidence in yourself and like just that competitive fire. Like that is something that I've seen is the key thread between every champion is the mindset. Everything else is weird. I mean, you can even look at like technique wise in swimming. Like you got people with some super weird, weird technique. You're like, that shouldn't work, but it does. And then you talk to them and you find out what their mindset's like. And you're like, yeah, you make it work and it works for you. And so I just think that's so interesting and something that I definitely admire about you and something that's going to continue to bring you far. And you haven't just – it's funny that you said you at first were like, okay, let me focus on some of the like longer events so I have a little more time as opposed to a sprint event. You've gotten really good at the sprint events too.
Like, it's thank not, you.
Like you can out sprint just about anybody in the country, Emily. And like that's
thank you. And
I remember at one point freestyle was your weak stroke, and now you go like 22 and 49, and you can sprint free, you can distance, like you can do everything. And so even though you're like, hey, I maybe this is more of a strength, you've never let something that's a weakness continue to be that. Like you've always improved upon it. And is that something you've always made a point of doing? Is that something that happened naturally, or you're always like, hey, I know I'm not as good at sprint freestyle right now, I'm gonna put extra focus on this?
So I mean, for IM, an aspect of it is just really being strong in every stroke, but another part of that is thanks to my teammate Anna, you know her, and we are next to each other, or she's in front of me, or I'm in front of her every single day at practice. And she is a phenomenal freestyler. And I hate losing. So I'm going to race her every day. And I think that's really helped me with my freestyle. And even especially because that's something that I struggle with, but her being there and being so talented is reminding me that I can, like, if I work at it, I can also, like, I can also succeed too. So.
For sure. Yeah. And you're following in the footsteps too of many Olympians, Olympic champions, world record holders who also aren't super tall and are breaking the standard there. And it's just, you have really good efficient underwaters and your stroke's super efficient.
You
work like crazy. And so anyway, there's no limits. I've told you this before, but now I'm telling everybody, there's no limits I would ever put on you as to like what you can or can't do. Cause like you actually alluded to before, like, I don't think we know we'll ever come close to our actual limits. And if you're willing to believe that and keep pushing them, you're going to keep pushing them. And you are also, the IM queen in the Swim Strong program. You have both of, as of this recording, at least have both of the records in the 2IM and the 4IM. And so that's something that you've worked your butt off for, but
thank you.
It's so fun watching you race IM because, like I said, that proves you are good at everything. But can you talk a little bit about some of the most impactful things in the Swim Strong program for you? Some of the things that you've noticed are like, this was really impactful in your swimming career, whether it be mentally or physically?
Yeah, sure, of course. So I think one thing that's really helped me was the leg strength I gained from it. I know we talked about how I'm not the tallest swimmer. I really need the push off the wall, and the underwaters are key, especially in the 200 IM. So just the legs workouts have really helped me there, just because with being explosive and also just being able to maintain a strong kick for a long time. And yeah, so I think that's one of the vital parts for the IM. And also, I feel like for in terms of my 100 fly and my 200 fly, I've seen a lot of increases in arm strength, which is, I mean, obviously very key to butterfly. And I've dropped so much time, which is awesome. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of just all around. And it's always interesting to hear like some of the main things that stand out where you're like, oh, I really feel the difference here. But that doesn't just come from doing the program. It comes from you doing it consistently and doing it at a high level. And then combining that with the mindset you have, because one thing to kind of go through the motions is another thing to pay attention to all the little details and do it at a high level. And that's something you've done phenomenally. But so outside of all of that, Can you tell us like how you ended up deciding to go to Stanford? Because that's a big deal. That's a wicked smart school, a wicked fast school, which they're going to be really lucky to have you there. But curious if you could share that journey now that it's out there publicly, how you ended up landing on Stanford.
Thank you. Yeah. So when I was 13, 14, I was at Long Course by Nationals, and I was convinced I was going to make the 50 free junior nat cut. And YNATS was 3 days before junior nats. So we had the flights ready. We had a trip to Hawaii booked out of California for 2 weeks. I didn't make the cut. So, but we still had to go. And it was being held at Stanford at Avery Aquatic Center in 2019. Mm-hmm. So we had however long the meet was, 4 or 5 days just to explore the campus. And I really fell in love with it. So beautiful. The facilities are amazing. And the area surrounding is just awesome. Also, where I live is super academically competitive. I've always loved, I really enjoy school, especially math and science. And Stanford is a more STEM-focused school. So ever since, you know, that unfortunate junior's trip to Palo Alto, I did come out of it with something. And I had, after that, I always wanted to go to Stanford. So that was kind of my dream, which is lucky because cool. I know a lot of people go into the recruiting process not really knowing where they wanted to go. Yeah. That has always been in the back of my mind, thinking that I wanted to go there. But mm-hmm. I did enter the recruiting process with a really open mind. And I visited, well, when I was being recruited, there was a 5-visit limit. And I took all 5 of my visits, which is super unusual. A lot of people don't do that. Mm-hmm. But I took all 5 of my visits. I really wanted to try everything out because, you know, like visiting at Stanford at 13 and falling in love with the campus is a lot different than being 17 and committing to actually moving there.
Yeah.
So I wasn't set on it at all. I just knew I really liked it there. Mm-hmm. So I went all 5 of my visits, and I went to, I think, 3 state schools, 2 private schools, a lot of differences in terms of like undergrad, how many undergrad students, area, like city, sort of suburban areas. I've tried everything. And at the end of the day, it's still a Stanford for me. And really awesome. I just absolutely loved it there. The team was amazing. The school is obviously amazing. The coaches I really, really bonded with. And so that I really loved all of the schools I visited. And I could see myself there at all of them, but I really knew that Stanford was the place for me at the end of the day. It was really hard to say no to the other schools because once you talk to the coaches so much on the phone, like it becomes more than just like sort of business, and you actually get to know them and you're kind of like friends. So it's really hard to say, to decline a school. So I really had trouble with that, but I did know that Stanford was the place for me. So.
Yeah. I think that's probably hard for everybody. Like that part is never fun, declining and telling people no, because everybody wants you, especially when you're a top recruit in the nation like you. Everybody's going to be really disappointed when you say no to them, because you could have gone anywhere you wanted. But I think it's a great lesson too for people who say, I'm definitely going here, to still try out other schools. So just make sure, because you really don't know. I also love the silver lining. I see the silver lining you had from that junior national trip. See, you're always pulling. That's such a good way to frame situations, and something great came out of it. But you also have a really uncanny memory of dates and times. And like, as you were describing the story of like your journey, and then when we met, and then like different time frames in your life, I was like, holy cow, you have a really, is that something that like people have ever said to you before, or you don't know about yourself?
Yeah, people are always like, really? You remember that date? Because I don't know what I was talking about with my friends the other day. Well, it's just numbers in general. Mm-hmm. Like, we were at practice, we were talking about someone's 2 a.m. time. I was like, oh, she goes like 159.22 last or 2 years ago at YMCA Nationals 2022. And they're like, how do you know that?
Like you said, I'm just one of the things, I can't even remember 10 minutes ago in this podcast, but you said like March 14th, everything shut down. I was like, how did you know the date? That's so crazy. And then you're like, this is when that meet was in November. And then this is when we met. And I was like, that's, That's uncanny. And then you just mentioned, though, you like math and science. So obviously numbers are something you're really good with. Is that, do you have something career-wise that you're interested in? Like you're going to Stanford for something specific in mind?
Yeah. So at Stanford, I don't have to decide my major until the end of my sophomore year. So I had 2 years to kind of try things out. But going into it, I'm thinking engineering or architecture.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Is that something that you've had on your mind for a while or just something that you've become interested in and think maybe it could be cool?
So when I was younger, I was kind of was thinking either of those two, but this year really solidified that for me. These past 2 years in high school, I really love physics and I love calculus. So I think that it would probably be a good fit for me.
So that's how I know you're really smart too, because most people hate those subjects and you love them. So, I mean, obviously you're going to Stanford, so that's already obvious, but, I love hearing your passion for those things and, I'm excited about the career path. And speaking on whatever career path you choose, can you talk about how swimming, what has swimming taught you that you feel like is going to serve you for the rest of your life? What do you feel like are some of the main things you've taken from the sport up to this point?
So I think probably the main thing is learning to be uncomfortable. And my mom always says this to me, but she's like, if you want to succeed in anything, you're going to have to learn how to deal with change and how to be uncomfortable in your life, because to ever progress, you're really going to have to do things that you're not used to doing. So I think even like physical pain that you go through with swimming, or even just like psychological struggle, I think learning how to deal with that at a young age is going to help me later in life, especially when I have to make much more life altering decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Being a student athlete is, especially a swim athlete, I feel like pays so many dividends in all kinds of areas. Have you ever thought about, I love the be comfortable being uncomfortable too. Like your mom is spot on. Have you ever taken time, because you're so driven and are always like focused on how you can be the best you can be in every area of life, have you ever like recently sat and thought about how many of your dreams you've accomplished and like just taking a moment to appreciate like, hey, remember when I was this age and how Stanford was my dream and I didn't make junior nationals and now I'm a national champion and now I'm an Olympic trials and going like, do you ever, obviously you can't just like sit in those and dwell in those, but is it hard to, or have you done that along the way, been able to just stop and be like, wow, look what I've done?
Yeah. So I feel like sometimes I get really caught up in like the elite world of swimming. And obviously when I go to Phillips 66 and or Olympic trials, like I'm not winning events, and so I think it's easy to get caught up in that and just feel kind of not as successful. But when I do really think back to my goals when I was younger, I've accomplished so much more than I thought I ever would have. And it just makes me really proud of myself, especially when I was younger. I remember saying to my mom in the car, I was like, I want to get 3 or 5 YMCA national silver cuts at 11. I think I was 9 years old. And that year I made all of them. And I made junior Olympics and zones. And I think that just, and I never even thought of making Olympic trials when I was younger. Like I didn't even know that was an option. So it's just crazy to me to think back how far I've come, especially from, I mean, I'm still swimming in the same pool that I was back then, but it's so different.
Yeah. And you're already in like the top 0.5% or whatever, or 0.01%. I don't know what the percentage is of the swimming world. When you go to Olympic trials, I mean, you're one of like less than 1,000 people in the entire country who are involved in the sport of swimming who are allowed to be there because you've earned that right. And that's absolutely wild. And I think that also remembering too, you're still so young, like you still have so much in front of you, like, and so your mindset's so driven and you want to be great and you love winning and you hate losing, and that's what's going to make you great. And one day I will not be surprised if you are winning events at Phillips 66, at trials, at whatever level you decide you want to go to. But even if you never get to a certain point, break a world record or whatever, like you, because of the way that you're wired and the work that you put in, you will always be able to look back and say, I don't have any regrets. I did everything I could possibly do. And you'll be so satisfied with your swimming career. And I think it's just an important, most of the time for people, you have to remind them to like focus on the things that you have, like have a strong mindset, be consistent, you know, be wired to be great and never settle. For people like you, I think it's important for people to like sit and remember and enjoy the moments along the way in the journey, because you're doing things that people, like some people, if they got to as far as you, they would be like, that'd be like a dream come true for them that they never could have imagined. And so it's good to have a balance of both, for sure. But I have a mindset more like you. So that's why I say it, because I struggle with that, to sit and be like, wow, like, let me enjoy this for a moment. So is that something you feel like you've gotten better at as time has gone, or you feel like it's gotten harder?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's definitely gotten easier as I've gotten older, just because when I was younger, I didn't really have like 12, 13, 14. I didn't really have a good like gauge of like swimming times and my placement in the elite world. But as I like go to Olympic trials and I see, like, SwimStorm wrote an article and I was actually reading it the other day. It was like 300 something women have qualified. And I was like, only 300 women have qualified and one of them is me. Like, that's just phenomenal.
That's so cool.
It just makes me so like proud of myself.
You should be 100%. And that's so important, like to take those moments in and remember them along the way, because you've earned it and you've worked so hard. You've inspired myself and many others. Emily, thanks so much for taking the time to be on the podcast. Keep shocking the world, doing things that people tell you you can't, and keep that hunger that you have while enjoying all the moments. But thanks for taking the time.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
Absolutely. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our YouTube channel to catch a new episode each Monday. You can also check us out on social media at SwimStrongDryland. If you would like to join the SwimStrong family, visit our website at swimstrongdryland.com.